Well, now that President Obama has defined his State of the Union, we're going to get a couple of opposing political perspectives and on the speech. And we want you to weigh in on this week's big question as well. How would you describe the state of the nation? Please go to WPR.org/joy and register your views on the State of the Union. On our online poll, we will compile the results at the end of the hour and announce them. First of all, on our big question debate this morning, let me introduce our participants. Basil Smigel is president and founder of Basil Smigel Associates, Democratic political consultant and policy analyst. He's also an adjunct professor at Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs and the City University of New York's Murphy Institute for Professional Studies. Good morning, Mr. Smigel.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Also joining us, Lenny McAllister, author, former congressional candidate, and conservative commentator. His books include Diary of a Mad Black PYC, Proud Young Conservative, and Spoken Thoughts from an Amalgamated Advocate in Today's America. Mr. McAllister, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back again.
So let's start by getting your opening statements to what the president had to say last night. Mr. Smigel, we'll start with you. What did you think?
Well, I actually liked a lot of what the president said. He had definitely more of a populist or a progressive tone. He met with mayors from across the country the other day, including New York's new mayor, Bill de Blasio, who in a lot of the national stories has been pointed to as sort of a leader in progressive politics, just not in part because of the fact that he's mayor of the city of New York. So I think you heard some of that language and that tone coming from the president last night. And I think there are a lot of people across the country, including a lot of his strongest Democratic supporters, who liked the more forceful president that will say, I'm going to use more of my power to get things done rather than wait for Congress to get it done. And I think a lot of folks who sometimes don't understand that the president doesn't make laws but does have a lot of power through the bureaucracy of government, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I don't mean it in a pejorative sense, but there's a massive sort of a bureaucracy through the agencies in the federal government. And he said that he would use his power through executive order to make the changes and the policy changes that he needs. I think there are a lot of people that were waiting to hear some of that language. They like the stronger tone that he took. And let's be clear about this. A lot of it is geared toward trying to give Democrats ammunition for these midterm elections this November. So I think he gave them a little bit, maybe not as much as I'd like to have heard, but I think he gave them enough to get the ball rolling.
Lenny McAllister, let's get your views.
I think that President Obama has always been very good at drawing a roadmap for America. Unfortunately, under his leadership as president, he has not been able to take America any place and take America to new heights. And once again, we've heard a lot of great rhetoric and a lot of flowing rhetoric in January, but the American people need to focus on what's going to transpire on this president's watch from February to December. I know that the professor mentioned president being able to have a certain amount of power, but power is not leadership. Leadership is the ability to get this Congress to come together, to broker deals, to do more of the types of work that they've been able to do. For example, pass a budget for the first time in 5 years. Those 5 years include 2 years under which the Democrats had control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. The American people want to see something transpire with this president that will unite the country, reinfuse hope back into the country, and be able to get the economy moving forward and get America back to the place that we should have globally. And right now, what we're seeing is a president saying that I will do as many things as I can around the normal order, just the same way we passed Obamacare, around the normal order. He and the professor mentioned very clearly that the president doesn't make laws, but this threat of I have a pen and I have a phone is not necessarily bringing about that uniting tone that we heard from candidate Obama in 2008. And unfortunately, if this is the tone he's going to take for the next 3 years of his presidency, his legacy is going to be one of divisiveness and stagnation, not one of growth and opportunity.
Income inequality was a big theme in President Obama's speech last night. Lenny McAllister, how serious a problem is the income gap in America, and how should we go about narrowing it?
It's definitely a problem, and it's something that I commend the president on bringing up. I know that a lot of people believe that income inequality is nothing more than a catchphrase that refers to some boogeyman that doesn't really exist. But if you look at where we are as Americans, we have two Americas. We have a divided America right now, and previously we were able to reunite the country and elevate the country because we were able to transpire the woes that we had previously. We were able to make sure that people coming from ghettos had an opportunity to become doctors and engineers. We were able to bring our talent to fruition regardless of where they came from across our diversity. And I do believe that we're going to have to stimulate this economy so that people have opportunities for education and good jobs so that we can reinvigorate that aspect of the American dream once again.
And Basil Smichel, what was your take on the income inequality theme?
I was glad to hear him talk about it, and I think Mr. McAllister is absolutely right. It's not just a catchphrase. In fact, the leaders at the World Economic Forum in Davos have been talking about it as well, because their concern is that the income inequality that's not just here but across the world is going to undermine the global economy. So this is a very, very real issue. I think what Democrats would also say, and the president said this last night, is that when combined the income inequality currently with in food stamp allotment, in Congress's unwillingness to extend unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed, and his desire to raise the minimum wage, we saw that he's doing that with federal contractors. There are bills all across states in this country that enacted minimum wage increases at the beginning of this year. Here in New York, we've been talking a lot about airport workers who move some of the wealthiest people around the country to their business meetings to go make more money, but yet they're not making enough really to put food on the table and take care of their own families. So I think these are some real concerns that the president has raised. The question, I think, in the long term, again, with some of the like things like unemployment insurance and a reduction in a food stamp allotment, can we do enough to keep people from sinking deeper into poverty? And it's true that we do need to stimulate the economy. It's getting better, but it's still not where we need to be. And if you look, even corporations, what's interesting to me is that their share of GDP has actually gone up. So corporations, the private sector, some of these big companies are actually doing very well. It's a lot of other folks, including a lot of small businesses, that aren't doing so well. We need to make sure that we level the playing field a bit.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue with our big question debate this morning, and also invite you to participate at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. The Joy Cardine program is also on Facebook. You can go there and send us your question or make your comment. Also, please go to wpr.org/joy and vote in our online poll. What do you think is the state of our union? wpr.org/joy. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of our discussion. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What I offer tonight is a set of concrete, practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class. Some require congressional action, and I'm eager to work with all of you. But America does not stand still, and neither will I. So wherever and whenever I can take steps without legislation to expand opportunity for more American families, that's what I'm going to do.
President Obama's State of the Union message last night, at least part of it was to Congress, if you don't do something, I'm at least going to do some things on my own. What about this go-it-alone approach that the president seemed to be touting last night? We'll start with Basil Smichel and then Lenny McAllister.
As I was saying before, I actually believe that a lot of Democrats really were happy to hear him say that. I know Lenny was talking earlier about, the president talking a lot in his first campaign and second campaign about working with Congress, and we did see that happen. But, you know, the president feels, and a lot of Democrats feel as well, that Congress isn't really willing to work with him. And as a result of that, you have the stagnation that I think people are looking at and saying, you know, this isn't the Congress that we supported. We'll vote for our own member of Congress, but we're not necessarily in favor of what Congress as a whole is doing. And the president's ratings have gone down comparably. And I think he's looking at this and saying, look, if I'm going to have any kind of legacy beyond this health care bill, and I'm going to fulfill any of the promises that I made, I'm going to have to go this alone. And I think there are a lot of Democrats looking at that and saying, this is the guy, this is what we wanted to hear, and are looking forward to the next couple of years of his administration.
Lenny McAllister?
I think the statement, I mean, I think really the tone in some regards is disingenuous. The statement I want to focus on is President Obama saying he's willing to go it alone for the sake of all Americans. Well, if he's willing to put things into place for the sake of all Americans and bypass Congress, why does he not delay Obamacare and the damaging effects of Obamacare that have impacted thousands upon thousands upon thousands of American families the same exact way that he created exemptions for key constituencies and the same way he delayed the mandate for big employers? Why does he not put other actions into place that will help people get back to work rather than focusing on the splintering issues that he has made sure that he's been able to gin up in order to win his reelection bid in 2012 and put Democrats in the best light possible despite the failures of Obamacare and the stagnation of the economy? For him to say that he's willing to go it alone for the sake of Americans and then see him continue to placate the special interests time and time again, I think that just that phrase right there is disingenuous. And those that have watched their premiums go up because of Obamacare while he is taking care of key constituencies and told the rest of Americans to deal with it, it's not even a true statement. I find that to be very disingenuous and extremely political on the part of the president.
Well, I would also argue that he took it right back to the Republicans last night on that very issue and said, look, if you had real legislative fixes, come to me with them. And I think over the years in all of this sort of arguing and negotiation about Obamacare, and look, I'm a Democrat, and I think the bill does some good things, and I think the bill is very flawed in other ways. And in fact, the implementation of the bill was also significantly flawed. But I think what he is arguing and what Democrats would also argue is that, you know, Republicans in Congress have an opportunity to go to the president and say, these are the fixes that we think we want to support. But he has not seen that, and he took it directly to the Republican members of Congress yesterday and said, come to me with some real concrete legislative fixes, and we'll sit down at the table. The party itself, I think, is also wrestling with being the party of no. And the Republicans realize that you can't try to repeal Obamacare anymore, and he spoke about that as well, that they need to come with some real concrete answers. And I think not only did the president challenge them to do that, but I think Republicans within their own party are wrestling with their need to actually do that because they're realizing that their constituents are upset at the fact that there's gridlock in terms of fixing this bill. And there are important fixes that need to be made, no question about it.
I want you to, but I'd like to refine that a little bit because I want to go back to something you said earlier. You criticized President Obama's leadership, and you said that he needs to find a way to get Congress to act together. How do you think he's going to be able to do that when John Boehner can't even get his own caucus to act together?
Well, I think let me go with two spots. Let me first go to your question there, John. I think that what we found with the budget passing, what we have found with some of the negotiations in regards to immigration reform possibly moving along, some of the negotiations we're possibly seeing with the Farm Bill moving along, and we'll see how the votes go this week with that, I think that there are opportunities for Congress within the Republican constituency to finally move along, especially after the debacle from a political optics perspective from the Republican side when it came to the government shutdown last year. So I think that we have some momentum from the Republican side that will finally get at least that side of the aisle pretty much lockstep, and even disagreeing amongst the diversity, but making sure it's not damaging. But back to the point that the professor made earlier, you know, the optics of the party of no, that's politics from 2010, but let's go back to 2009. It was even President Obama himself in September 2009 during the infamous Joe Wilson You Lied speech, where he offered Republican ideas to the Democrats and said, here, these are some ideas that the Republicans would like to be considered in Obamacare. And during those times, the Republicans were completely locked out. This bill was passed in a hyper-partisan fashion with negotiations back and forth between Democrats, and it took an executive, non-binding executive order to Bart Stupak and his crew at the very last minute in order to even get this bill passed. They knew it was very flawed, and they knew that they had to pass it because that was the only time they'd have the political numbers to pass it. This bill was passed in a flawed fashion. It was passed as a flawed law because of the flawed politics that President Obama has bought into, the very flawed politics he was supposed to come in and change. Now, the tone that he's taking today and where he took yesterday in January 2014, if he carries that tone throughout the rest of the year, I think we can see some agreements like we did with the lame duck Congress in December of 2010 or what we've just seen with the budget negotiations just a few weeks ago. But that's if that tone continues.
Okay, let's move to a different topic, immigration. Let's hear what the president had to say.
Independent economists say immigration reform will grow our economy and shrink our deficits by almost $1 trillion in the next two decades. And for good reason. When people come here to fulfill their dreams, to study, invent, contribute to our culture, they make our country a more attractive place for businesses to locate and create jobs for everybody. So let's get immigration reform done this year.
The president calling on Congress, specifically the House. The Senate has already passed immigration reform. President calling on the House to get something done. Lenny McAllister, let's start with you. What did you think about what the president had to say? And what do you think the chances are of the House passing immigration reform legislation?
I think it would be interesting to see if the House can get something done. I think there's more of a willingness to get something done this year from House Republicans. So we'll see what they're able to come up with and how that can be negotiated with the Senate when it comes with their form of what they have passed. What I've heard from the president in regards to immigration goes back to the issue of the economy. And I preferably would like to see this president, specifically since he's in his second term, going into a lame duck status, talk more about disadvantaged Americans, disadvantaged citizens not having access to jobs. For a president that comes from the south side of Chicago, a sanctuary city, and knowing that there are undocumented workers there that can get construction jobs and other good blue-collar jobs that African-American citizens are locked out of from unions or from other circumstances, I need to hear this president speak more to the needs of citizens needing jobs, to citizens growing this economy, not just undocumented workers growing this economy. I know that he's trying to make an argument to get immigration reform done, and I think that we should get it done, but taking the economic argument to placate that perspective, I think is just politically a play towards the Latino voter in 2014, not what the realities are in urban America.
Basil Smichel, and I'll just remind you, we're up against a hard news break here in about 2 minutes.
Sure. Listen, I live in the city of New York, probably the most diverse city in the country. And as a child of Jamaican immigrants myself, I am heartened to hear the president talk about it. In fact, I wish he had done it a little more. There's a lot more engagement of this on the ground, certainly here in New York. I don't know if the House will get this done, but there is growing concern that it actually should get done. And my fear is that we get derailed again. It's sort of been derailed a few times during this president's administration, and I want to see something get done this year. It needs to happen. And I think that the call to talk about the disadvantaged communities, I think, is right that Mr. McAllister raised. I don't think it's a situation where immigrants are taking a lot of jobs, union jobs in particular, away from citizens, but there are a lot of very hardworking folks that have come here from other countries, and they're operating in the shadows right now, and we need to not have them do that. We need to actually give them a path to citizenship. Mr. President is talking about, wish he had done a little more, but he is talking about it.
All right, we're talking on the our big question discussion this morning about what President Obama had to say in his State of the Union message last night, his fifth of his presidency. We've talked about immigration. We've talked about some of the president's economic policies. Coming up after the news in just a minute or two, we'll focus on some other issues just to kind of give a preview. The president made a rather pointed remark about climate change. We'll talk about his energy and environmental statements that he made in his speech last night. Also, some other things that we want to get to in this hour. The president's call on Congress to pass the legislation that would allow him to close the prison at Guantanamo, something that he had promised to do when he first ran for election and has so far been unable to do. And also, the president called for the establishment of a new kind of a retirement savings account for those whose employment didn't provide an IRA or any other kind of pension. Well, all of those will hopefully get to that. And we want to talk about the Republican response. So let's hope we can squeeze all of that in about 20 minutes. We'll see how we do. My guests, Basil Smichel and Lenny McAllister, and I will be back after the news. And hopefully you'll be with us as well at 800-642-1234. Don't forget about our poll. Go to WPR.org/joy and vote now. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.
The president talks a lot about income inequality, but the real gap we face today is one of opportunity inequality. Republicans have plans to close the gap, plans that will focus on jobs first without more spending, government bailouts, and red tape. Every day, we're working to expand our economy, one manufacturing job, nursing degree, and small business at a time.
That was Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers, who is the House Republican Conference Vice Chair and the highest-ranking woman in the House of Representatives, giving the official Republican response to President Obama's State of the Union message last night. We're having our big question debate today on what is the State of the Union. My two guests, Basil Smichel, President and Founder of Basil Smichel Associates, and Lenny McAllister, author and former congressional candidate, conservative commentator. Lenny McAllister, I'm going to start with you. What did you make of Congresswoman McMorris Rogers' comments last night, and what did we hear that was new there?
Well, I think that with, for example, the soundbite where we don't have income inequality, we have opportunity inequality, it's partially right. We do have opportunity inequality, but we do have income inequality, and the gap is widening. And unfortunately, my party did not vote to extend the unemployment insurance to make sure people had that bridge to get over to those opportunities. We'll see what the Republicans in the House do when it comes to this farm bill. Unfortunately, they're talking about cutting food stamps. We have people in need, so we have to make sure that we address the income inequality as we're bridging the gap for the opportunity inequality as well. That said, we as Republicans have to be inspiring. This president comes with a lot of inspiring rhetoric in January, but doesn't have a lot of inspiring action or leadership February through December. If we're going to be successful as Republicans, we have to come with inspiring ideas that make sense to moderates, independents, and conservative Democrats so that we can bring them on board with us in November and work together with them the other 11 months of the year to get this country back on track.
Basil Smichel?
You know, I would agree. I mean, I think that we do have income inequality. We do definitely have an opportunity inequality as well. You know, and I think that I think there are problems on the Democratic side as well. I think, you know, we wanted to do a lot more than we did on student loans, for example, because we, on the one hand, we talk a lot about trying to get more and more people to college. But what's interesting, all the research will show that even though there are more people going to college than have been before, there are fewer people staying in college. You know, so the colleges and universities are providing packages for people to attend, but not for them to stay. So I think there needs to be more conversation about that. He did talk a lot about the connection between education, getting more skills, and being able to get into the workforce. But he also talked a lot about pre-K. It's a big topic here in New York, trying to get universal pre-K established throughout the state, not just in New York City. But again, the question is, Do we have enough money to do that? If we talk about achievement gaps, if we talk about giving people a really sort of a head start, no pun intended, because there is a formal program called Head Start, but the reality is if you're trying to give people that opportunity, it starts at a very young age. And I would hope that both the president and Congress can come together to talk about this, because it's not a black issue, a white issue, Democrat or Republican. There's no Democratic or Republican way to teach kids. We just need to teach kids. And so I think education plays a huge role in it. You touched on it a bit yesterday, but I would like to see in this coming year in particular this Congress work on that.
The choice of the spokesperson as spokesperson in the official Republican response, and I say official because there were several other unofficial ones, and if we have time, which I don't think we will, we'll get to that. But what about the choice of Kathy McMorris Rodgers to deliver the speech? Basil Smichel, was that a Republican attempt to court women voters?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, in fairness, she is a very top notch legislator. But I definitely think there is a need, particularly in 2014, to really mobilize women voters. There clearly is, no matter the election year. But I think it is going to be especially important this year, because you're going to have issues like education coming to the table. So you're going to have a lot of parents or a lot of women going to the polls. We saw the influence of women voters, particularly younger women voters in Virginia's recent elections. So I definitely think, and quite frankly, I think the Republicans have lost some ground on issues like abortion in a lot of states across the country. There are folks that would not mind some Republican stances on some social issues, but I think a lot of folks feel that there is more vitriol that needs to be there on a lot of women's issues coming from the Republican Party, and maybe this is an opportunity to sort of soften that image, but it's not going to happen in one night. There needs to be an ongoing effort. So maybe this is sort of the first cut at that. And for the sake of sort of the validity of the issues and the full discussion about it, I do hope from the Republican standpoint that this is an ongoing engagement.
Now, Lenny McAllister, what about the selection of Kathy McMorris Rodgers to deliver their address?
She represents the most vulnerable Democratic electorate that the Republicans can gain in 2014. It's a Gen X married white woman. And they know that in order to get anything done or further push President Obama to a point of working with them and coming closer to their perspectives on things moving into 2015 and 2016, they need to move the numbers and move the needle, particularly in the U.S. Senate. Therefore, it made sense to have somebody like the representative give this official response to the State of the Union address last night. I think that it was a good political move. Again, I would have liked to have seen her be able to inspire more than just the base. I think all three Republican responses spoke to the base and not to America. And again, as Republicans, we have to speak to America. President Obama at least tries from time to time during his State of the Union address to speak to all America. Now, of course, he will speak to his base as well. We as Republicans have to mimic that line for line in some regards and speak to all of America in a better fashion, a more inspiring fashion than we saw from all three last night.
And if I can just add very quickly, if you think about who the big Democratic names, the sort of up-and-coming Democratic names are, particularly for 2016, of course, there's Hillary Clinton, but let's take that off the table for a second. You've got Elizabeth Warren, but you've also got Wendy Davis in Texas. Mary Landry, the Democrat, is in a tight race in Louisiana. So there are also extraordinary, prominent women sort of leading the charge in multiple states across the country. So I think it was a very appropriate choice last night.
President Obama also used his address last night to address at least one really crucial women's issue, which is he called on Congress to make equal pay for women the law of the land and, quote, get rid of policies out of the Mad Men era. Lenny McAllister, what did you make of that?
I know that it's a Republican argument against that. I would like to see the legislative language that has some Republicans against this. To me, it seems like it's common sense. And if there's law, if there are laws on the books that already protect women that should ensure that equal work for equal pay, let's make sure that we enforce those laws first before we add anything else. So let's not repeat what we had to do 50 years ago with the civil rights legislation, where we had amendments on the books, and then we had other laws that we had to overcome with federal legislation. We keep doing the song and dance with more laws on the books, basically enforcing the same thing. If those laws are already there, let's get real tough on those laws there to make sure that women that work hard, that are everything from janitors to CEOs to bank presidents to university presidents and, heck, even presidential candidates of the United States, get the due pay that they deserve. I don't think this is something that's really more difficult than it needs to be politically, but if there's up on the books, let's do that first before we start talking about anything else.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, you'll get no arguments from me with that. You said it perfectly, and I appreciate his Mad Men reference, by the way.
Yeah, it's always good to get a pop culture reference in the president's speech. One of the things that the president also did, and when he ran for election the first time, one of the things that pieces of his platform was to close prison at Guantanamo. He raised that issue again last night to some people's surprise. Let's hear what he said, and then let's talk about that briefly.
This needs to be the year Congress lifts the remaining restrictions on detainee transfers and we close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Because we counter terrorism not just through intelligence and military actions, but by remaining true to our constitutional ideals and setting an example for the rest of the world.
The president's insisting he still wants to close Guantanamo and putting it on Congress to get that done. Basil Smichel, let's start with you.
You know what? I am shocked that this hasn't happened. It still surprises me that this hasn't happened. And I know that the president has talked incessantly about wanting to get this done. And I don't know, and I'm going to be honest with you, even as a Democrat, I don't know if it's his not being forceful enough on a regular basis to make this happen, or it is indeed Congress blocking this from happening. But I am shocked that this, that we're still talking about this 5 years into his presidency. You know, he's gotten our troops out of Iraq. He's pulled the troops out of Afghanistan, as he promised he would. But we still can't somehow seem to get this done. And it's shocking to me that we're still talking about this.
And Lenny McAllister, is this the year we finally get the Guantanamo prison closed?
No, but this is the year that you need to make sure that Democratic base comes out and votes in order to keep the Senate in 2014. And that's exactly who he was speaking to. This is not something that's going to get done. If this was something that he wanted to get done, it would have gotten done before January 2011, when he lost control of the House of Representatives from the Democratic Party's perspective. You know, this is a president that talks about constitutional ideals, but the first thing that comes to mind as I hear that soundbite are the things going on with the NSA. I think about how, constitutional ideals, having laws on the books, but how he's been able to manipulate what he wants and what he doesn't want out of his own landmark legislation. You know, so to talk about legislating or ruling from constitutional ideals when it comes to Guantanamo, if we were going to do that, that prison would have been closed by now. That's not going to close underneath his watch. I'd be very surprised if you hear any more about it after the next 30 days as we go through the rest of 2014. That was politically driven in order to make sure that the Democratic base on the far left heard him say something that he mentioned back in January 2009 to drive them to the polls to make sure that they can hang on to the Senate.
My RA guarantees a decent return with no risk of losing what you put in. And if this Congress wants to help, work with me to fix an upside-down tax code that gives big tax breaks to help the wealthy save, but does little or nothing for middle-class Americans. Offer every American access to an automatic IRA on the job so they can save at work just like everybody in this chamber can. And since the most important investment many families make is their home, send me legislation that protects taxpayers from footing the bill for a housing crisis ever again and keeps the dream of home ownership alive for future generations.
The president speaking about his MIRA program that he wants to implement. Lenny McAllister, we'll start with you on this. For workers who don't have a pension plan or 401k provided through work, what did you think of this proposal?
I mean, I think that he spoke as a well-to-do president that is coming from upper middle class. I mean, the bottom line is the generations now, the millennial generation and Gen X, they're not going to be able to retire. We're finding many baby boomers that are working through their 70s and into their 80s, some of which because they cannot retire. I think that this is a nice sentiment, but the truth of the matter is the primary focus of this president, which has never been the case since he's taken office in January 2009, is getting the average American back to work in a job that's going to allow that individual to support his family, support himself, and push forward the American dream for their children and grandchildren. That is something that we need to talk about first and foremost. People cannot even think about retirement if they can't get back the jobs that are going to pay more than $9 or $10 an hour. It's just the same with the argument with minimum wage. We're talking about raising that minimum wage, but we're not talking about getting secondary and tertiary jobs into place so people can have career jobs, not just minimum wage jobs.
Basil Smichel, what did you think of the Myra part of the speech?
You know, I think it's a great idea, and I will go back a second and just say that what the president did was keep the country from going further, deeper into recession and even into a depression. So I think that was the first part. And then the second part was actually trying to grow the economy back, which he has done slowly, certainly not at the pace that we'd like, but has done it. The funny thing is, when I heard this last night, my mind immediately went back to the Al Gore and his lockbox idea. But I actually will agree with Mr. McAllister on this issue. I think that you have a lot of young people that are very nervous. They're just coming out of college and not getting the kind of jobs that they thought they would get, or if they're getting a job at all. And I would also add, and again, I'm saying this mostly from a sort of an academic or an independent point of view, if you look at the fact that you have a lot of young people that are not signing up for Obamacare because they're making difficult choices between health care and paying bills or keeping some of the money because they're concerned about how much they're going to have down the road. So I think in some cases it's good to talk about saving, but we at the same time need to get people money first before they can actually start thinking about how they want to save it. So if we focus a little bit more right now on raising the minimum wage, getting a little, giving people an opportunity to get jobs, looking at recent college graduates and making sure that they can actually keep some of their money instead of worrying about student loans and not going to college in the first place, giving people a little extra money now, and then they can start thinking about savings. And it's true, we're concerned about a lot of older people working longer because they're even concerned about their money. It's just not something that a young person thinks about very early in their career. So I think we need to focus a little more attention on getting them some money now, jobs now, before we start talking about how they're going to save money, you know, by the time they retire.
All right,
very quickly, I think that his statement basically highlights the fact that this president wants to claim a jobless recovery as a recovery without realizing that most Americans still believe that we're in recession.
All right, very quickly, 30 seconds from each of you in a little closing statement here, and Lenny McAllister, will go with you first.
I just think that President Obama did what he always does every January. He gives us very flowery rhetoric. He inspires us with how he presents his case. But once again, we have to see not just rhetoric. We have to see leadership. And leadership is working with people that don't necessarily believe everything that you believe, that believe in America enough, though, to work with you and get stuff done in a bipartisan way that infuses hope, change, and elevates the American dream for more Americans across the diversity of this great nation.
Basil Smichel, 30 seconds from you, please.
I think Democrats saw something good in the president's speech last night, and I think most Americans can too. You saw a more forceful president that's not willing to deal with gridlock but go around it and get things done through the power of the pen, the power of the phone, as he talked about. We'd love to see more conversation about immigration reform. He talked about veterans yesterday and our military. I think there are a lot of folks that would like to see more discussion around the VA as well, which I heard from an Army captain yesterday. But I do think there's enough in there to energize Democrats going into November election.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. We're late for a break, and then when we come back, we'll do our sound-off segment. People will have 30 seconds to give their views on the State of the Union at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Basil Smichel, Lenny McAllister, thanks for joining me this morning. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. All right, part of our big question debate every week is your chance to sound off. You've got 30 seconds. at 800-642-1234. We'll start with, and also remember to go to WPR.org/joy and vote in our online poll. We'll have the results tabulated and announce them very quickly here. Linda in Monroe, we'll start with you. You've got 30 seconds.
Good morning. I thought President Obama's speech was great. I agree with him about the economy. I think it's getting better. The Republicans said President Obama was not reducing the deficit, but he said he was, and he raised the income tax, top income tax rate, up to 39.6% in 2013, as well as he increased the FICA tax. And I also agree with Pocan's comment that he made earlier. And I think the economy is doing a lot better than it was under the Republicans.
All right, Linda, thank you. Bernie in Elkhorn, you're next.
The State of the Union is very poor. Our political system is completely corrupt because of private money and no public financing, and there's no talk about reforming that. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is being crafted by the Obama administration with full agreement from Republicans like Paul Ryan. All these free trade agreements do more to destroy jobs than anything else, and corporate Dems like Obama and the Republicans are in complete agreement, so they're both awful.
All right, Bernie, thanks a lot. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Is the number to call. You've got 30 seconds when you get on the air to let us know what you think is the State of the Union. And here come the online statistics on our poll, what you thought of the State of the Union. 37% of you thought the State of the Union was fair. 33% thought the State of the Union was strong. And 20% thought the State of the Union was poor. 8% of you just weren't sure. So there it is, 37% fair, 33% strong. So no majority for any point of view here, 20% for, 20% of you thought it was poor, and 8% said not sure. So, you know, the State of the Union message given every year in January, we've been talking about it all hour. And later on today, by the way, Judith Sears-Poisson is in for Kathleen Dunn. She'll be talking specifically about some of the things that the president had to say about about the women's issues. Gina and Eau Claire, we'll give you 30 seconds right now. Go ahead.
Hi. I support the president. I think he did a good job. I know many people who have benefited from the Affordable Care Act, and I think he should have been a little bit more strict and calling things as they are of the obstructionism.
All right. We got it. Thank you very much. My guests today were Basil Smichel and Lenny McAllister. Bill Martins produced this hour of programming. Cynthia Schuster did her usual outstanding job of directing. And Robin Cherry handled on-air production. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.